I'll start.
All right.
All right, I'd like to call to order our December 18th, 2024 meeting of the Ventura Port District Board of Commissioners. We will start with our pledge. Will make Joe do it. Joe, would you please lead us in the pledge?
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands. One nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Joe. Roll call, please.
Commissioner Howe?
Here.
Commissioner Stevens?
Here.
Commissioner Rainey?
Here.
Vice Chair Gardena?
Here.
And Chair Blumenberg?
Here.
Thank you.
We'll move on to adoption of tonight's agenda. Commissioners, thoughts on tonight's agenda?
Are we going to pull some items from the consent calendar?
Jessica, you want to address that?
Yes, we'll be pulling consent item K, the travel reimbursement policies for employees and commissioners.
And we're going to pull that and revisit it at a future meeting.
No, we're going to pull it, and I'm just going to make a few comments.
Okay.
At the end of the standard agenda.
Okay, and then we could take a roll call vote to.
Yes.
And I believe we're pulling item H as well.
Correct, because we want council to address that.
If they're addressing that, I have three other comments.
Yeah, we'll do that once we pull it.
So,
all right, so we'll.
I move we approve the agenda with those two changes, items H and K being pulled from consent.
Second.
All right, I have a motion and a second to adopt the agenda, except H and K will be pulled from consent and move to the standard agenda. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, the adoption is, the agenda is adopted as modified. All right, we'll move on to public communications, an opportunity for commissioners to, public communications, an opportunity for the public to address any items that are not on tonight's agenda. Anybody in the public want to address the board tonight? Seeing nobody in person, do we have anybody online? All right, nobody online either. We will close public communications, move on to our closed session report. Council?
Chair, commissioners, the board met in closed session to discuss the items listed on the agenda. They gave direction to council on each of those, but no reportable action was taken under the Brown Act.
Did we want to summarize?
Sure, I can do that. Chair Blumenberg, commissioners, I'm pleased to report that the district won a significant victory in court last week. The district was sued by a subtenant in 2022. The lawsuit challenged the district's practice of charging percentage rent. As you know, the district charges percentage rent to most of its tenants, a common practice in commercial real estate leasing. This lawsuit, however, claimed that percentage rent is not rent at all, but a tax on the tenant's income. The California Constitution, Prop 26, prohibits local agencies from charging taxes without the approval of the voters. The plaintiff said that because it considered percentage rent to be a tax, the district was violating Proposition 26. The district, on the other hand, said that percentage rent falls squarely within the definition of rent, which is exempt from Proposition 26. So we filed a motion for summary judgment, claiming there were no issues of fact and that the district's interpretation of the Constitution was correct. At a hearing on December 9th, Judge Rhonda McCaig agreed with our position and granted the motion for summary judgment. The ruling completely disposes of all the claims made against the district at the trial court level, and allows the district to continue charging percentage rent. Congratulations and thanks to Robert Bailey and Jeremy Schulman of our office for their hard work and persuasive brief, and to General Manager Brian Pendleton for his ongoing participation in the defense of the district.
And Tom, thank you for that summary and congratulations. And on behalf of the board, our appreciation to Lagerlof for leading us through this sticky situation to a great ending.
Thank you.
All right, we will move on to board communications. This is the opportunity for the commissioners to address any items related to the district.
I had two things. One is I had an excellent meeting last week with the general manager, our deputy general manager, and our harbor master regarding derelict boats. And I think they got a good appreciation for the issue and are devising some action items that they're taking on. The other is that I had the opportunity to go to the holiday party for staff, and Commissioner Rainey had mentioned earlier about how everybody gets along, and I certainly saw that at the party. It was a good time. It was well attended, and I was very impressed.
Thank you. Tony?
Because I had the pleasure of being a judge at the Parade of Lights this past Saturday. It was an array of boats and lighting that won. Yeah, you have to see it to believe it. So next year, make sure that you're there. But it was very, very impressive in terms of what efforts and I have to say the innovation that people exhibit with their boats and making it Christmas, singing, music, and all kinds of things like that. It was well attended, and I think it was an impressive view of the port and the district and how we're basically on the map and showing the rest of the area where we are and what we are. So thank the staff for that too.
Yeah, I had the privilege of actually representing the board at the Poinsettia Awards, where Ventura Harbor Port District and Port Hueneme received the Innovation Award for the work that was done and the partnership that was created. It is a little bit awkward for me to stand up and give a speech thanking them for the award when it was really the staff that put in an enormous amount of effort. So I felt a little bit like an imposter standing up there with Brian and Todd standing behind me when it was really them that should have been standing in the front, along with many others who participated in that. In addition to receiving the award, the California Legislative Assembly also gave the Ventura Port District a certificate of recognition in appreciation of your exemplary dedication, effective collaboration, and significant contributions to help make Ventura a special place to live and work. Commendations are conveyed for your achievements and upon being recognized by the Ventura Chamber of Commerce at the 2024 Poinsettia Awards. So just really thrilled to be a part of that. And it was a decent lunch with good desserts. So there was that payoff.
Thank you. Last night, I had the pleasure of attending the city council meeting when we got to welcome two new city council members, got to talk to them individually about the Port District, signed them up for tours. So be ready, Harbor Master, to give our two council members a tour. And I think we're going to get our port liaison also in that tour probably sometime in January. So hopefully the weather continues to cooperate for us. But nice to welcome those two council members. Nice to say farewell to council member Mike Johnson and the mayor. Yeah, Joe Schrader. Yeah, thank you. All right, so we'll close board communications and move on to staff and general manager reports. Brian?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, commissioners and members of the public. A few items here. The Saturday, December 21st from 11 a.m. to to noon. The fun of the waterside Santa paddle is back. Santa trades his reindeer for a paddleboard. Visitors can join him on the holiday paddle too, with the scenic 1 hour procession from Ventura Harbor Village. In front of Ventura Boat Rentals, through the marina to the Channel Islands National Park Visitor Center and back. The Santa Paddle is followed by the popular Winter Wonderland and Holiday Marketplace on also on Saturday, December 21st from noon to 4 at the Village. For photos with Santa and Mrs. Claus, his live reindeer, snowfall, professional bubble performances, kids crafts, holiday marketplace, shopping, carolers, and more. On Thursday, December 26th, the harbor welcomes back Chabad of Ventura for an annual Hanukkah festival and celebration from 3 to 4 p.m. with a menorah lighting, arts and crafts, entertainment in the Channel Islands courtyards. All are welcome to join. Then the new year begins with the Epiphany and Blessing of the Waters with the St. Demetrius, a Greek Epiphany celebration on January 12th from noon to 1 p.m. in front of the Greek restaurant on the marina docks, and all are also welcome to attend. Live music will continue throughout the holiday breaks in Ventura Harbor Village to welcome all of our visitors and guests. I did want to give a shout out to a couple of our staff, Wayne Hatch, Abel Gamino, and Gloria Atkins successfully completed the California JPIA Supervisors Essential Skills Program. This was a 9-part in-person training program to help supervisors develop critical skills for optimal performance. The training was held over a period of 9 months in Goleta, ending in November of this year. Our chair touched on it. We had last night the opportunity to first attend a reception and visit with all of our city leaders and others, but then during the formal meeting have the opportunity to provide certificates from the Port District on behalf of all of our commissioners to outgoing Mayor Joe Schrader and outgoing council member Mike Johnson. And as the chair mentioned, we had a chance to meet our new inbound city council members and definitely get them out here to the harbor and on the water before they get overwhelmed with all of their new duties at City Hall. So we look forward to that. And one other announcement, Commissioner Stevens was elected by the special districts throughout Ventura County to serve on the LAFCO, the LAFCO Commission in representing them. So congratulations. All right. With that, departmental reports are in the packet. And if you have any questions for staff, most are here or online and happy to answer any questions you might have.
Okay. Commissioners, let me open it up. Any comments on the staff reports, questions?
Yeah.
Chris?
I just wanted to, because I think it's important to recognize it and give you kudos for really being proactive on the breakwater problems and getting the core on that. As the report says, that's maybe a 5-year project, right, to get going, and a couple rough winters, right, is all it takes to really create a serious problem. So kudos to you for doing that. Appreciate it.
Lots of good work in the staff reports. That's great. Just a couple little things. One is that on the renaming of the boat, we had a public speaker asked to change. So thank you for answering that. That resolved that issue. But I'm glad that, you know, they could see we looked into it. The suite leak. Do we have many more units with cast iron pipes we're going to have to worry about?
Yeah, Sergio can probably make some comments, as can Joe, but it's been, you know, the facility was built in 40 years ago, and every time we open up a wall where there's one, we replace it. But sometimes the occupancy of the suites means that those cast iron pipes get trapped in there longer than their intended life, and this is an example of that. If you want, we can certainly have either of them comments as to.
I just don't know if we can do it, if there's any sense in trying to do anything more proactively. I assume when any time one leaks and that there's insurance to cover damage, and I know the staff's done a great job in moving tenants around you know, who are impacted by them.
Yeah, I'll say, and I'll give a lot of a shout out to both Joe and Sergio for this. Every time we expose any wall, for example, a lot of the restroom work that we've done in the recent years has exposed a lot of cast iron pipes that needed to be replaced. countless ones, I think, that Joe's uncovered that we've seen. And Sergio is working on a project at the public launch ramp restrooms. Again, another proactive instance there of taking care of it at the time. But again, some of them are trapped behind walls that are, suites are occupied, and they'll stay until the moment that there's a failure.
I understand. The last thing is the upwards of 100 semi trucks because of our prolific, wonderful squid intake. I'm sure that's going to be obviously grow a lot, but be taken into account with the plans for the new realignment, which because it'll what almost double the amount. So.
Yeah, the study done by WSP, they interviewed all of our stakeholders as well as those at the Port of Hueneme. Did calculations based on the landings. There's quite a complicated worksheet of all the expected traffic. And I think peak traffic on the busiest days that were recorded prior to this year, which this year looks like we're doing even better, but was about 160 would have been the peak landing. Maybe 200 is possible if we had all six fisheries gangbusters on the same day. I think that's just going to require a bit of an air traffic control approach when it comes time, that we'll have to be a lot more proactive in managing the truck arrivals and departures.
I have a few questions. On the capital projects report, what measures are being undertaken to ensure the timely completion of the electrical vehicle charging units?
Well, so fun to work with Southern California Edison. We applied for those grants in 2020, won the grants in 2021, and you can see where we're at. Between Joe, myself, and Brian, we've attempted to leverage the government affairs manager for Edison. We've gone through two different representatives for us, and we just seem to have a lot of trouble getting Edison to play ball. But I saw the crane today hoisting in the second transformer for the 1567. And I don't know, Joe, if they pulled wires, but maybe you could update us.
Good evening, boards. So yes, good news. Edison is already installing the second phase, which is the second location, 1567 location. 1591 location has already been installed. We have an outside contract with the local electrician that's going to start installing the EV chargers hopefully this week. And so they're going to move on to the second location. So hopefully, if everything goes as planned, within a week or two, everything's going to be energized.
Yeah. Everything will be set up. Whether or not it'll be energized, I'll
Joe, you breath. Joe, you can't leave till they get done. No.
It's a question on the Harbor Patrol. In light of the incident that happened this past week, are there any new initiatives or collaborations planned to enhance safety during the peak squid fishing season?
So this sort of blends in with, I did want John to give an update on the boat, the vessel that is known as the Net Effect. Some communication that we've had with the city. City provided an update to citizens last night based on information that we prepared collectively. And we also just sent out a letter. So John can comment, I think, on all those things.
Yeah. So quick answer to your, or good evening, Chairman, Board. A quick answer to your question is if you look at the picture, what is missing? Everything that would make dangerous conditions. This was, I think I was quoted as being an unexpected and unanticipated accident that can only be explained by Friday the 13th and something else. I don't know what it is.
Parade of lights.
I don't think we could replicate it if we tried, but it happened. Fortunately, we have a robust response in this area, both on the private sector and with agencies. A neighboring boat was able to deploy their skiff and within 2 minutes had the people on their skiff. We had people on the dock, heard the call, hopped on the boat, ran out there as fast as possible, but that other skiff was able to get there quicker. So that shows the community that's really involved with this. This fishery is one that is dangerous. That is commercial fishing. We do a lot of communications with them when there are more obvious hazards like high surf and wind events There have been times when we've coordinated with the Coast Guard to actually close the harbor entrance because it's unsafe for passage. That was not the case with this particular one. And I don't think that this would really warrant any changes in what we do. What this probably does is kind of reverberate throughout the fleet of just the importance of not being complacent, the importance of always having a person who's at the helm being the person who knows how to drive the boat. In the past, there's been times where the captain has turned the boat over to the crew because the fishing part, the part that he really makes the money at, was done. And then so he goes to sleep and they lets the person get the experience. But in some cases, those people don't have all the experience they need to avert a tragedy. Or in this case, it wasn't a tragedy, it was an accident. Fortunately, we had, like I said, a robust response. It was outside of the port district. However, we stayed actively engaged and influenced what we thought were the priorities in this particular instance. Because it was in proximity to the harbor entrance, we did not want it to hit either the break wall or basically run aground within the harbor entrance and stop all our traffic. So we worked with Towboat US and towed the boat northwest as far away from the harbor as we could. Later that day, the insurance company took responsibility for the boat. And so they were allowed to develop a game plan, which was in the next couple of days, to salvage the boat. They had hoped to have the boat righted by today. They brought up a large barge, crane, commercial divers who have been working for several days. But as you can expect, a very heavy 65-foot boat is a complex thing. And they don't want to have any injuries or have any damage. They are aware, and we have reinforced the concern that we have about a building groundswell that is expected to arrive in our region on Sunday and last throughout all next week. Significant surf. And talking to one of the commanders at the port earlier today with the Coast Guard, they were in agreement with us that the focus should be, if it's not up by tomorrow, to start active planning on relocating it in deeper water, far outside of the Ventura region, whether that's up north that gets a little bit more sheltered from these storms that are coming, or out to sea. We don't know what the answer is. They would love to bring the boat into the harbor, but we would not want them to bring the boat into the harbor and get stuck right in the entrance. The Port of Wainimi will not let them bring the boat in because of the same concerns down the Port of Long Beach. So it will be in a situation where at some point they're going to make a decision whether it's viable to salvage it or if it's too dangerous. If it's too dangerous, they'll remove the fuel and sink it in a location that's suitable for that size of a vessel, so it's not a navigational hazard. But as Brian mentioned, to reinforce our concerns, we sent a letter to the captain of the port, who oversees the entire Coast Guard sector in this area, saying that we support their endeavors. We appreciate their oversight, and we would ask that they strongly consider relocating the boat to protect our fragile coastline. And I think we have we also shared that letter in a draft form to the city, who will more than likely draft their own, very similar, so we have cohesiveness between the two of us and stay a step ahead of it. So perfect conditions, we might get the boat flipped tomorrow. Other than that, we expect that the boat will be away, and I'm going to continue to be involved in that. So if we get closer to Saturday and it's not, start making a lot more phone calls and start kind of ringing the bells a little bit more. So open to any questions.
Yeah, thanks for that, John. You mentioned that it's outside of the district boundary. So is our role kind of a mutual aid kind of a role in this? We don't have a formal responsibility.
We're an interested party.
Okay.
We're supportive of the Coast Guard, who takes the lead on commercial vessel accidents. It's within our sphere of influence, so we could assert something, but there wasn't a need for it. The Fish and Wildlife and the Coast Guard are working in tandem to ensure that there's no pollution issues. And the salvage company that is handling it is Global Dive and Salvage, which is one of the top five in the world, and has done, I think, the I forget the name, but the cruise ship that went aground somewhere in Europe, they were responsible for that. So they're able to really get some heavy equipment, talented people, and mitigate it.
I got one more question on the looking at the November 2024 marina report. What's the current occupancy rate for marina slips, and how does it compare to, let's say, our annual average?
I'll answer on Dave's behalf for this. So you'll see that it's actually 103%. Is that what you're asking about?
By 103%. Can you explain how it can be over?
Yeah, so when a boat is at sea or not in the harbor, we are able to release on a day-by-day basis the individual slips. So if in this particular environment we have, you know, boat one in a slip and then it goes out to sea and starts fishing, but boat two needs to park and unload, then we can actually get rent from that second boat as well. So that's part of the slip agreement, is the ability to reutilize the slips that are available. So you can see the 99% are assigned. So there's one that we can turn over and over at our behest, and then also we can reuse the tenant slips when they're away.
More. Thank you.
Vice Chair.
Just two questions. One is, I know that we're concerned about the dredging schedule and whether or not they're going to be able to stay on it. Could a government shutdown affect that in any way?
It has in the past, but it has also not in the past. So there, a government shutdown isn't uniform in terms of the agencies that are impacted. So this money is obligated. It is through a continuing resolution. But that doesn't mean that the certain level of shutdown wouldn't send all these employees home. So it's that can really be dependent on how the shutdown manifests. So in like 2013, it was a problem. In 2017 or 2018, it was not.
Okay. The other one was just something off the Harbor Patrol report, a gunshot wound on 11:30 at 10 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah, I'd rather not talk about that one. It was no Port District employees were in harm's way.
Okay.
I get those calls immediately, and so I reached out to Dave and his staff and said, avoid that particular area. The proper people went in, and it was not what you might envision.
Okay.
Sorry.
No.
I have to stop right there.
No, and I appreciate the need for being careful. I think
no public was in harm at any point. That was the key thing.
Because I was thinking about part of the public safety issues that we talked about at the public meeting. So I wanted to double check on that particular issue. So, all right, no public or employees were in harm's way.
At no point.
Thank you.
All right, couple of comments. I appreciate the update. You can stay. Appreciate the updates on the boat. I look forward to more updates as this thing progresses. Todd, you used the word obligated about the dredging. So I think when we last spoke, the Corps of Engineers had put the request for proposals on the street. Have they really awarded a contract yet?
They're
still evaluating bids, aren't they?
Federal regulations require the RFP to be advertised for 30 days. So I think it was December 8th when they advertised. So it'll be January 7th when they would open the bid. Those bids are not open publicly. So even our contacts at the Corps do not know who won, who had the best price, how many people submitted. That's all kept within contracting at the Corps of Engineers. It's usually about a week later that we find out if someone has been selected. Then they must submit their bonds and insurance and everything else, and then they'll be issued a notice to proceed. Given they'll already be at Channel Islands, that's not a big deal for us. They're not going to start work here before March 1st anyway. So We're not really in any jeopardy there. Going back to what Commissioner Gardina said, that there could be a risk that a government shutdown kiboshes all of that. You know, they won't open the bids, they won't do anything. I don't see that as particularly likely, but it's entirely possible.
Okay, we'll look forward to update in our January meeting then about the, hopefully there was an award that they can announce.
Absolutely.
Right. Very good. And then barge on site, you said, or maybe March 1st.
Yeah, they'll work in Channel Islands as long as they can. They will not complete the amount of dredging that Congresswoman Brownlee fought very hard to get funding for. So that's, I'm sure, a big disappointment for our two neighbors to the south. But they have a hard environmental window to get out of there. And at that point, they will relocate up here. And depending on the conditions here, which, you know, really in the next 4 weeks is when we'll see most of the sediment move into the channel and the sand trap. Well, that's when we'll really know how much work they need to do, and hopefully they have enough time.
And the fact that they're going out to bid, the issue that you guys were wrestling with, CMANC jumped in on 2 months ago, I think now, about the California and the Corps kind of getting stuck on some legalese. They've been able to push through that and put the contracts out on the street.
I don't remember if I covered it in this report or if because I've already drafted next month's report, but EPA puts the 401 certification responsibility on the local Los Angeles Regional Water Quality Control Board. They published the signed water quality certificate that the Corps needed in order to award the contract. So that's already out. You can go on the website and see it. So we're all happy. So the issue is finally resolved. It took a long time, but we got there.
Well, well done to you and well done to CMANC for jumping on that and keeping this critical process moving. So any last comments on staff and general manager reports? Good discussion. Appreciate all the reports. Appreciate all the staff updates. We are going to move on to a bittersweet proclamation. We're going to honor Joe Gonzalez for his, I got to put my glasses on, make sure I get this number right, 38 years of service. If you'll bear with the vice chair and I, we have a proclamation that we'd like to read. So proclamation honoring Joe Gonzalez for his 38 years of service to the Ventura Port District. Whereas Joe joined the Ventura Port District as a temporary full-time utility worker in May 1986, immediately moving up to a regular full-time utility worker in June 1986.
Whereas Joe has gained vast institutional knowledge of Ventura Harbor Village by working as a maintenance worker too in the 1990s and an electrician mechanical worker in the early 2000s. His tenure coupled with his institutional knowledge has been of great value to the district and its business partners.
Whereas as a maintenance supervisor for 12 years and facilities manager for 5 years, Joe consistently demonstrated his value to the district by excelling in the upkeep and proper maintenance of its facilities to benefit both tenant and the public.
Whereas since assuming the role of capital projects manager in 2021, Joe has been instrumental in advancing the modernization of the district's infrastructure, taking proactive steps to prepare its facilities and assets to meet the needs of stakeholders in the community.
Whereas Joe has made significant contributions to the completion of numerous building and tenant improvement projects, including overseeing the facade improvement of the new loose cannon, the creation of the district's newest village offices, installation of a new generator for the district administration office, re-roofing several village buildings, and overseeing the village repainting project during the COVID-19 pandemic.
Whereas Joe was instrumental in the oversight of numerous ADA improvement projects throughout Ventura Harbor, including the improvement of all village and beach restrooms and trash enclosures.
Whereas in addition to his role in maintenance and later administration, Joe has acted courteously and professionally in managing our business partnerships with architects, consultants, and contractors to ensure a high standard of work and fair cost.
Whereas Joe has made the commitment to ensure that our capital projects have the minimum possible impact on our tenants and the public, minimizing safety hazards, ADA access constraints, noise, and other business disruptions in the completion of district projects.
Therefore, be it resolved that the Ventura Port District Board of Port Commissioners expresses tremendous gratitude and honors Joe Gonzalez for his 38 years of service to the Ventura Port District on this 18th day of December, 2024. Well done.
Thank you all. I would like to take this moment. I'm not quite of a public speaker, but telling my colleagues here for 30 some years and 20 years, 15, 20 years, I mean, it's been a long ride and it's been a really nice ride. And I want to give a special thanks to Todd Mitchell for guiding me through all that, you know, all those rough rides and challenges. And special thanks for Brian as well for believing in me, promoting me to a capital projects manager, and a special thanks to my wife and my family being along the side for the 38 years of, you know, it's been good. It's been really good. And I thank you all, and I will surely miss every single one of you. Have a good night.
Thank you for joining us tonight. All right, back to business. So we'll move on to the consent agenda. I'd like to divide tonight's consent agenda in half. The first half is something we could do voice votes on, so potentially we'll look at items A through G, and then we'll look at items I and J separately. Those would require a roll call vote. Remember, we polled H and K. So before I do anything with the commissioners, let me ask if there's any public comments on the consent agenda. Seeing none in the audience, do we have anybody online?
Okay, there she goes. Kyra, you are able to speak.
Great. Can you hear me okay?
Okay. Yeah, we're good.
You're able to hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. I appreciate it. Hi, everyone. Good evening to the board and everyone else in attendance. My name is Kyra Wallace. I work for Ocean Rainforest. I am their regulatory and community engagement associate. And we're part of the consent agenda this evening, hopefully in support of a letter of support for our application for a commercial scale seaweed aquaculture project off the coast of Ventura. And I just wanted to, you know, introduce myself tonight to the board. Wish I could be there in person. But unfortunately, I'm just a name on the screen right now. Hopefully we'll meet you in person soon. But just wanted to express my gratitude for the support that the Port District has provided so far in the process. We're currently in the public comment period of our application to the Army Corps of Engineers. So this is a very exciting time for the project. And we would have not have gotten to this point in the project so far if the work that the Port District had done with the Ventura Shellfish Enterprise had not already laying so much of the groundwork that Ocean Rainforest is building off of at this point. And so we're very grateful for that groundwork to be there. And we're hoping that we're able to move this project forward, and would just like to express my gratitude for the support we've had so far. And if any of you have any questions at all, or want to talk further about the project, Brian can connect you with my contact information. I'm happy to come down to Ventura in person at any point, or schedule a Zoom meeting, but I'm very happy to provide more information. And if you'd like to, please feel free to reach out. And again, thank you for the time tonight.
Kyra, thanks for joining us tonight and sharing those comments. Commissioners, any thoughts, any questions on those items A through G? Thank you.
A couple of them. First, on item in D, is that continuing at the same approved rate? That's the medallion services. We're extending the contract.
Yes, we confirmed with the business that there would be no rate changes.
Great, thank you. The NOAA, I think it's great to support it. I'm a little bit concerned about some of the positions, but mostly concerned about fish farming, shellfish and seaweed, great, but fish, not so good on that. I like the idea of the rainforest. Do our current facilities support unloading the 2 tons, or will we have the realignment done before we're there? Never mind the 6 tons they're talking about.
Yeah, well, I guess two different things. One is that the fish pier has cranes that can offload the kelp. With regard to the larger facilities, that's part of the master plan, and they and other stakeholders have been asked to give us feedback and have done so with respect to those future facilities.
Yeah. And then I just have two sensitivities. One is, making sure that they're sensitive to bycatch, because I understand that some kelp farms have major bycatch issues. I have no idea, what the plan is for this one. And also to mitigate floating seaweed. Seaweed's already a problem for boaters, and I'd like to make sure that there's something taken into account to minimize runaway seaweed.
Yeah. With regard to your comment with respect to NOAA, this board has taken a position, and the recommendation here is consistent with that with respect to kelp and to bivalve aquaculture, and has not taken a position with respect to finfish pens. So the letter that I'm seeking to be able to send would be in support of those two items.
Commissioners, any other comments, questions? If not, can I entertain
approval
a motion?
Approval of items A through G?
Second.
All right. I have a motion and a second to approve consent agenda items A through G. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, items A through G are approved. All right. Items I and J are roll call votes. Commissioners,
I'm afraid I found some errors in those two.
Elizabeth, do you want to address the errors?
Yeah, let me kind of pull it up on my screen right
Tom,
now.
Tom, do we need to pull that item to address the errors?
Yeah, it's probably to pull it off the consent agenda and do it as a separate agenda item.
I apologize, but going through them, I found some typos in both I and J.
Okay, so
can I ask, administrative typos, grammatical, punctuation?
Good question.
Because technically you can just give those to me and I can make those corrections.
That one's a typo. I thought it was funny. The very first one has a resolved is typoed, but where is it? Oh, 130, bear with me a moment. Oh, I did have some questions also on the capital improvement fund. Do we ever do formal reserve studies?
Chris, jump in.
Why don't we just pull all these items and just take them one at a time? I think that's probably the safer route to go. Personally, I'll
agree.
Okay.
Okay.
So we should go back to H. We should go in order.
Yeah.
I thought you pulled H.
We did pull H.
We're not pulling I and J, right?
We just pull them all.
We need a motion to pull them, Tom, before we do that.
No. Oh, well.
Tom?
I defer to the clerk. No, she's right. You do not need a motion.
Okay. Thank you. All right, so.
Do you want to take H, I, J, and K now or after the standard agenda?
I'd prefer now. I don't have a strong preference, so I'll defer to Commissioner Stevens. Let's tackle H.
Okay, I believe H, Tom or Todd?
Yeah. Well, actually, Oliver's online as well, if I understood. Yeah, correct.
Yes, Oliver is online.
So with item H, this is a recommendation that the board adopt resolution 3514, approving a memorandum of understanding for the collective bargaining agreement between the Ventura Port District and the Service Employees International Union, Local 721, representing all regular full-time and part-time employees classified as the Harbor Patrol. Do we want to do a detailed dive?
I don't think we need a presentation. It's just been simply removed from the consent.
Yeah.
So commissioners can ask questions and we can go ahead. Although if you would like a presentation of the commissioner, I don't need one.
No, I think we're familiar
Well,
with it.
if it would be helpful in understanding what's coming up for discussion now, then maybe it does make a sense to get an overview. I leave that up to Commissioner Howell about
Yeah,
what.
I thought Elizabeth, you had identified.
Oh, just a few errors. One I mentioned, I guess that was during closed session, on attachment one, which in our package is page 102. The second paragraph beginning, whereas discussing lead capacity, I think it desperately needs a comma to clarify a very important sentence. So it should be lead capacity occurs during the hours worked during a shift when the Harbor Patrol officer one or two is working alone with a Marine Safety Officer, comma, and a senior Harbor Patrol officer or Harbor Master is not working during those same hours on the same shift. I'm bringing it
I
up.
am. I've got that one.
I also had a question about same hours on the same shift. I mean, is how literal is that? I mean, if it's 5 minutes off, 10 minutes off, I mean, or we not being, I don't know how literal we need to be on that.
The shift schedules do have a 15-minute overlap, right? So therefore that couldn't apply during the overlap period, and the rest are full hours. So it would basically be the full hour. There could be, for example, cases where an employee goes off shift and suddenly there's only one lead
Right.
worker and one marine safety officer. So that would be triggered, but not
So,
the entire shift.
but if it's what if the it would be the for the whole hour, or the 15, what period? Okay. Just curious about that one. Let me get to page. On page 112, vacation. It's just a typo. It's a minor
Oh,
one.
that's
Any vacation leave requires that the employee. That requires that the employee have taken. Oh, I guess it must be all right. It just sounds awkward. Okay. Requires that the employee has taken. I would think it would be. It's a minor little one, but on the bottom of page 14, article 15. Full-time employees who are called in to return for duty and report to work for 2 hours or less, including those released from duty without having to work, comma inserted there, shall, because there was a comma separating that out, including, comma including should be without having to work, comma, shall receive an amount equal to 3 hours and so on. The very last sentence, the district reserves the right, just a little typo there.
Elizabeth, are the bulk of the comments grammatical?
They vary. And the very last one on this item is on page 115 under Article 16. The third sentence says a patrol officer must be used to fill a shift. The officers one will be called. I'm not sure what that is referring to.
Yeah, these actually carry over from the previous MOU, so there was no deliberation between us or the union on that item. So Oliver, I would defer to you what the procedure would be to modify. Where is this? What section is this? It's on page 115.
116, 115, 114.
Article 16, the end of that first paragraph.
This one.
Yeah, what is officers one? Is that a?
It sounds like a job classification.
I think it's a typo. I think it's supposed to just be officers
That's
one.
what I was wondering. And it I think it just creates confusion when it says officers one, if there isn't an officers one.
So Oliver, do you think
Yes,
you
yeah, I can
provide advice as
address.
to how to?
Sure. Yes. So I think, certainly appreciate noting these items for the record and in terms of, handling it vis-a-vis, is a contract, and what we can certainly do is I can provide correspondence to the union related to them, and I don't anticipate that there would be any concerns on their part. These would not substantively change the terms of the agreement, and so I don't anticipate any concerns. And I can also note for the our record so that for correction going forward for when we next revisit the MOU, but certainly appreciate that.
So Elizabeth, if you have grammatical issues, I think we could provide those to the staff and they could incorporate that. Do you have substantive questions on, I mean, for example, clarifying what was intended by a certain clause?
On the MOU, no. On the reserve study, there's.
We're not there yet. We're going one at a time.
Okay, I didn't realize. Okay.
So on item H, you had some grammatical things. You can provide that to Jessica
Correct.
so she can, before she finalizes it. But Tom, I don't think that would prevent the board from voting on grammatical. We'll let the staff make the grammatical changes.
Correct.
Great.
Okay. All right. So the substantive questions have been asked and addressed, correct, Elizabeth?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So let's see. We pulled this off of consent, so I should ask for public comments on this resolution. No, I don't see any public comments in the room. Do I have any public comments online? All right, so let me turn it back to the board. And
I approve.
I need a motion to.
I move we approve number H, adoption of resolution 35144. With the modifications as identified.
And subject to the
Second.
staff making additional
There you go.
non-substantive changes.
Yes. Second.
All right, so we're at a motion and a second. Explain to me the correction. You lost me on the. Was there a correction that we were going to make? I understand the grammatical and how we're going to handle that, but correction?
I think the one, if you can call it grammatical, but I think it's significant, is that missing comma. The others were minor typos.
You're going to send those. All right. So I have a motion and a second to approve resolution 3514, subject to the corrections that you're going to send to Jessica.
And approval by the staff.
And approval.
Yeah.
All right. I need a roll call vote for this one.
Commissioner Howell?
Yes.
Commissioner Stevens?
Yes.
Commissioner Rainey?
Yes.
Vice Chair Gardena?
Yes.
Chair Blumenberg?
Yes.
Vote carries 5-0.
Chair,
yes.
could I just make one comment of appreciation with regards to the last item you just approved?
Please.
I did want to recognize and give our appreciation to Harbor Patrol Officers 1, Garrett Winter, and Harbor Patrol Officers 1, Mason Alford, along with Oliver Yee with the LCW, as you heard from tonight, and Todd Mitchell for their work on this effort. In bringing forward the new MOU for a 3-year period.
Yeah, well done. I concur with that. And I think back to the Harbor Masters vision of creating a career path here, and so these Harbor Patrol officers, one stepping up, shows great leadership. All right, let's move on to item I, which is resolution 3515, adopting a reserve policy. I don't think we need a presentation. Elizabeth, you had a question on this?
I had a couple of questions. One little typo on page 126 and 130. It's the same typo. Now be it resolved is misspelled of the word resolved. Other than that, I had questions about whether we do any formal reserve studies. For example, I know the Yacht Club, they have, you know, they actually hire somebody to come in so that, because I don't know how much it says that the board is responsible for determining reserves, but, you know, are there, I don't know, are there studies done? How do you determine what are suitable reserves?
Yeah, I don't believe there were any substantive changes to this round. Some of these documents are required to come back to the board annually.
Okay.
And but Gloria Adkins can answer your questions.
We have not done any official studies. We have looked at the GFOA and CSDA for some of their recommendations as to like how much we would have a percentage retained for reserves, unrestricted reserves that will be on hand. Not too much about the capital, but the board made a decision that in order to start building a capital fund, they put together this reserve, but no actual formal study has been done on it.
Okay. It may be something that we want to talk about in the future. I don't know. On the bottom of page 128 says the minimum balance maintained should be at least equal to the asset depreciation for the preceding year, which is great. Do we take into account inflation or replacement cost or anything?
No, not at this time. It's exactly what it says there.
Okay.
This policy hasn't been readdressed in a while. We just kept saying, okay, yeah, this is working so far, this is working, and we've just been continuing it, but we certainly are open to, okay, now do we want to do something more with it?
Okay. I mean, I'd certainly like to chat about it more at some point, but other than that, I that one, you know, misspelling, I don't have any other questions on this.
Yeah, just as a side, for municipalities, cities, special districts, and counties, you're required to have a reserve, an investment policy, and it's encouraged to have a reserve policy so that your governing board is aware of what it's basically so that what happened in Orange County a few years ago didn't happen and people started doing things without any basis. As for the question as to whether or not they do a reserve in the private sector, yeah, they usually hire folks to do that. In the public sector, it's basically you look at this thing called fund balance as a basis of that so that you could stay liquid but have enough money there so that if you get into trouble, you have it there. And typically what you do is you look at best in class for a similar public sector or organization. And I think some of the professional organizations could lend some, you know, their expertise on something like that.
Move approval.
Second.
Yeah, I have a motion and a second, but I want, before I call for a vote, do we have any public comment on item I? Seeing nobody in the room, do we have anybody online? All right, no public comments. And so we're going to take a roll call vote on the approval of resolution 3515, subject to the staff's incorporation of some of the grammatical items that Commissioner Howell identified. Roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Howell?
Yes.
Commissioner Stevens?
Yes.
Commissioner Rainey?
Yes.
Vice Chair Gardena?
Yes.
Chair Blumenberg?
Yes.
Vote carries 5-0.
All right, we'll move on to adoption of resolution 3516, the Ventura Port District investment policy. So, were there questions, comments on this resolution.
I felt very good about the policy itself. I did find two more errors on page 136, which is also reflected in the final on 146, that now, therefore, it currently reads, it shall be the policy of the district to invest funds in a manner which will minimal acceptable risk, and it should be which will provide a minimal acceptable risk. And 143, oh, under diversification, every place you've been very good at using the word shall, but under diversification, it says the district will diversify, and I thought that should be a shall. But...
Any reaction to will versus shall?
I'll look to the lawyer. Hold on. I'll look to the attorney for shalls and wills.
That attorney.
Yeah, I view them as basically the same, so that's fine.
Can you tell me what section that is again?
Where was it? It was page 143, and again on page 153, the final version of it. Under diversification, the district shall diversify. And other than that, I thought it was a strong policy.
I personally don't use the word shall at all. It's the most litigated word in the English.
Unfortunately, all of the other words in here are shall. That seemed to be the only will sticking
out. Yeah, I understand that. There is some value to consistency.
Chris?
I'll just add that I love your added section on additional prohibited investments.
Yeah.
Great addition.
All right, it looks like we have no more commissioner questions. So let me pause for public comments. Any public comments in the room? Seeing none, how about online? No public comments online. So I'll turn it back to the board. Anybody willing to entertain a motion on this?
I so move. Will you approve it with the two corrections?
Second.
I have a motion and a second to approve resolution 3516, subject to the corrections identified by Commissioner Howell. This requires a roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Howell?
Yes.
Commissioner Stevens?
Yes.
Commissioner Rainey?
Yes.
Vice Chair Gardena?
Yes.
Chair Blumenberg?
Yes.
Vote carries 5-0.
Thank you. All right, we'll move on to resolutions 3517 and 3518, approving updates to the expense reimbursement policies. Jessica, yes. On this one, I think you had some corrections you wanted to explain.
I put them at the end. So, okay, so there are some corrections just to resolution 3518, the commissioner policy. When making the revisions, I was solely working in the employee one and then transferring the corrections over to the commissioner one. And for the same day, for the new section of same day events, I missed changing over the word employee to commissioner.
Correct. And you handed out a revision that corrects all of them, except I caught one.
Yeah, there's one more that I missed, right. And I looked hard in this too.
It's under the same
I'm,
day.
I'm circling it right here. Oh, okay. It's right above. Yep. It's right here.
You got it.
Okay. So with that correction, do we have any other comments or questions about these resolutions?
I only had a question, which I asked staff. I don't see any policy for business lunches and didn't know if the board had any interest in establishing a policy for business lunches, if they ever need to take anybody out for a meal and so on. I don't know that it's necessary, as you know. Todd, you know, said all the credit card receipts are on file, and they certainly are. But you could make that case for anything, and it doesn't provide that much transparency. I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's a big issue, but for an organization that is very, very careful about public perception, I just wanted to raise the question whether it was a concern to anybody.
I'll look to the board for direction.
All right, Brian's turning that one back to us. Any board members have any thoughts on business lunches? Whether that needs to, whether we need to adopt a written policy on that?
It's not on tonight's agenda, though, correct? So it's not being suggested as an addition to the current policy. It's being suggested as something we consider at a future date.
I would agree with that.
So I would say that it would be something that we would not discuss tonight because it's not on the agenda.
It's not on the agenda. Yeah, it is not travel.
It is and it isn't because it's part of employee reimbursement and commission reimbursement. But if we want to table it to a future discussion, I'm fine with that.
Table it to a future discussion for insertion into this one or creating a separate policy. So we could improve this policy as is, and then at a later date, come back with whether or not it's necessary to write a separate business reimbursement.
So that would require us to bring it back to the board for an open discussion.
So we could approve this. I'm going to let you take this, Chris.
First, do we have any public comments on that? Sorry to jump in there, Mike.
Appreciate the help. Yeah. So we have no public comments in the room, no public comments online.
I move that we approve the policy in front of us and that we further direct staff to look into a policy for business lunches as being in the future part of this or its own independent policy.
Second.
All right. So I have a motion and a second to approve resolutions 3517 and 3518 with the additional action for staff to evaluate whether we need a separate policy or amend this policy to address business lunches. Roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Hall?
Yes.
Commissioner Stevens?
Yes.
Commissioner Rainey?
Yes.
Vice Chair Gardena?
Yes.
Chair Blumenberg?
Yes.
Vote carries 5-0.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for the assistance working through these changes. Thank you for the detailed checks. I'm sure Jessica will incorporate all those changes. We'll move on to our standard agenda and the meaty topic, which is our parking management plan. Brian?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to ask Todd Mitchell and Ben Verdugo, who I believe is online, with Dixon to provide the presentation tonight.
Happy to do that. All right. Next slide, please, Jessica. Oh, no problem. Are we sharing the screen? Or can you do full screen, like presentation mode? Okay, so with me tonight is Ben Verdugo, Dixon Resources Unlimited. I'll be giving the presentation, but Ben really is the expert in the room. He was kind enough to invite me to a half-day session for where I got to meet a lot of the professionals in Southern California. And then I attended a conference held down in Costa Mesa that the board approved. I did that at the end of October, if I recall. We had a great opportunity to interview a lot of vendors. I've also interviewed a lot of vendors in the process of getting ready for this RFP process. And so hopefully we can give you a lot of information, solicit your recommendation or solicit your support of the recommendations and potentially get an RFP. Next slide, please. So the recommendations before us tonight, or before you tonight, is to receive an update on the entitlements of the parking management plan, receive an update on the final PMP details, and approve staff to publish a request for proposals from parking management service or for parking management services. Next slide. Just as a recap as to why we need to do parking management, I don't know if anyone was driving around the village lots on the weekend for Parade of Lights, but we were packed house, way oversold. We had 375 people use the free shuttle on Saturday night, and we had people parking in the Hobson lot, so it was great. And it's great to be popular, but The reality is that also translates into some challenges for visitors in terms of impacting their experience. A study done in 2021 showed the occupancy during our peak periods well exceeds the industry standard of 85%. Next slide. Just as background, you know, the rates proposed in the plan and approved in the entitlements are comparable or cheaper than our areas around us. So it is a very reasonable stepping stone into paid parking, and hopefully will not be a deterrent when compared to any other destination the public might want to choose. Next slide. As a recap, the paid parking period will be in Harbor Village and the beaches on Fridays, Saturdays, Sundays, and holidays only. Mondays and Thursdays will be free. The period will be from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. Up to 4 hours will be $1 an hour. And if you're going to stay longer than 4 hours, then it'll be $10 an hour. If you have an ADA placard or plate, those parking spots are equally in demand and will also be paid parking. Next slide. On the north side of the harbor, it's a bit of a different story because the launch ramp is used 24 hours a day throughout the year. And in which case, to match the program that's in place now, it will be 24 hours per day. The same fee structure, $1 an hour, $10 for a day, and same thing with ADA placards. Next slide. So that was all the program that was brought forward first to the city at a director's hearing where it was approved. There was a appeal. The appeal was later withdrawn. And then the California Coastal Commission heard the CDP application specifically for Harbor Cove Beach because that is shared jurisdiction with the city and the Coastal Commission. That was approved on November 13th. There were a couple of comments, but none actually related to the Coastal Commission's jurisdiction. So there was no deliberation by the board. It was passed unanimously and we're ready to go. So both CDPs came with conditions. Bilingual signage, I think that's actually a great condition. We were happy to agree to that. The Coastal Commission will require actually seeing and approving the sign plan before we can put them up. The Coastal Commission's CDP has a 5-year term, whereas the city's does not.
And is that only for the lot that they have authority over?
Only for the lot that they have authority over. There no rate increases are permitted without going back for a permit amendment or a permit or a new permit with both agencies. That's a condition in place. Landscaping along Harbor Boulevard, which is where our new dry storage, the northern part, will be, must conform to scenic coastal drive or coastal scenic drive landscaping. Apparently, that's a thing. And we're working on that, and we've got our landscape architect that came, Roberto Leo, gave a presentation a few months ago. He's working on that right now. And then construction related to the project just follows the city standards of 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday to Saturday.
I would note that that will replace a significant amount of sod. So to our sustainability efforts, that should have a beneficial effect on our landscape along Harbor Boulevard and I think move the needle with respect to our sustainability goals.
So the entitlements are in place and we're ready to move forward with soliciting services for parking management services. I really have to say straight up, you know, May long weekend, if we're not up and running by then, I think there's significant concern for the public seeing a program come into play halfway through the summer. So it's a very strong push from here to get done and ready to go for Memorial Day. Issuing the RFP does not predetermine anything related to permits for tenants, employees, boat captains, et cetera, nor validation. We know, we heard at the board retreats that there was a lot of opinions and a lot of dialogue on that. I have had some conversations with some of our tenants about this, trying to sort of work through how we're going to do this. How many employees do you have on your busiest day? How many transactions do you do on the busiest day? As we previously talked about, it's really important that employees who are working late, employees that have mobility restrictions, those are not the ones we should be asking to walk to a satellite parking lot. They really do need some opportunity. But by the same token, we cannot have 100% of the employees parking in the parking lot. Otherwise, we won't achieve anything with the program. So staff will return to the board for direction on these issues, independent of what we're talking to about tonight. So I just wanted to make that point abundantly clear. Next slide. The parking inventory, when you think about how many people we see on the promenade during bright lights on a busy weekend, it's actually shocking how few parking stalls there really are. There's only 1,056 in the village lots, you know, under 300 at the two beaches, 211 at Spinnaker. So it's no surprise that the turnover truly is needed. Next slide. So in consultation with actually originally ATE, but also supported with Dixon, is the goal of using license plate recognition technology, which actually, instead of paying by an individual space, the vehicle pays for the parking. And the beauty of that is that if you are at the beach and you feel like going to get an ice cream cone, you just move your car to the other side of the harbor, don't pay any extra money, and you're creating more incentive for visitors to enjoy every amenity that the harbor has to offer. There is a requirement to add a car counter as well as an LPR at the entrance of each main entrance, Spinnaker and Schooner. And the reason being, because we won't have gates and we won't have arms, when a vehicle comes in, they go to pay to park, they're standing at the kiosk to pay, and then someone drives by and gives them a ticket. We need to start the clock on a grace period, and that's what the static cameras do. Next slide. All right, so Ben was instrumental in helping me understand what really some of the best technology on the market was. And I was very thankful that Sergio, Wayne, and Luis came down to Costa Mesa for the day to press the buttons on what Ben's boss refers to as the petting zoo to try all of the different technologies. Everybody was in hands-down agreement that the technology of the Flowbird CWD system was the best available. Flowbird is also the units that the city of Ventura uses, so that helps ensure a consistent experience. The touchscreen is fully programmable. We can put whatever we want on it, our own logos, multilingual, different buttons. It's really fantastic. The security of the coin receptor is excellent. The guy could barely get it back in himself because he's like, I don't have the right key to put it back in. The fact that it's very bright, we were in the basement of the conference center and it still had cell phone signal enough. My cell phone couldn't send a text, but it still would manage to register the payment. Powder coated stainless steel. So per discussion with legal counsel, it is fine for us to specify this as a technology requirement of the RFP, and that's our intention. Next slide. So virtual payment is something that most people are probably familiar with, pay by text, pay by app, scan a QR code, all these different ways, go to a website. It's very interesting to me that this actually is a convenience to the public and a convenience they're willing to pay for. It is standard practice to pass on what is called the convenience fee of using these technologies, 30, 40, 50 cents per transaction to the user. At this point, in consultation with Ben, our recommendation is that we will require the vendors to propose their preferred virtual payment option. But the district may choose not to accept that and negotiate with another party. And the reason is there is some really, really unique features that different vendors offer. One in particular offers some perks with permit management that the tenants could make incredibly good use of. And that might be a reason to change our pathway after the fact. So while the RFP will require them to propose one, we may choose to go in another. Other municipalities actually have two and sometimes even three different virtual payment options. So the city of Ventura has two, an app and a pay by text option. Next slide. Quickly on costs, there is obviously the upfront costs associated with buying everything and installing everything. That's going to be a pretty significant cost in the first year, buying 15 pay stations, buying a vehicle, putting the LPR cameras on top, et cetera. We're going to need to make a portal for every tenant. We're going to need to make a, for them to manage their own permits. We're going to have our own portal, like a master portal, where you can, where we are going to be able to manage that. We're going to need to create multilingual websites, landing pages. It's a lot of upfront things that need to be done. We're also, given the weather, we probably do need to install some hardline power connections, even though they all do run on solar. I harbor concerns that maybe they won't have enough power on really, you know, cloudy weather, bad weather days. And probably won't need to install self-signal boosters, but we may have to do that as well. Next slide. Ongoing costs are pretty obvious, I think, as well. We're going to have someone driving around all day, making sure that people are compliant with the program, issuing citations as needed, fully maintaining the equipment, answering questions, resolving disputes. The vendors will also need some space for spare parts, keep their uniforms, park the vehicle, and the district will also need to dedicate its own staff time to managing the vendor. Brian and I and Ben think maybe half full-time equivalent dedicated specifically to this role. Next slide. There's also the cost per transaction. The term merchant of record refers to your interface or our interface with the credit card company. We are the merchant who is transacting. All of the vendors that we would solicit services from can act in the, on our behalf, and they take the credit card fee from us. So in essence, someone going to the kiosk, they put four quarters in and pay for an hour, we get a dollar. If they pay with a credit card, we get less than a dollar, but the visitor is still paying a dollar. If they pay by app, they'll pay 45 cents or whatever the number turns out to be through negotiation, and that fee will be passed on because it is a convenient option to use the app. Maintenance contracts also require reimbursement for vandalism, out of warranty failure, those sorts of things. Next. This has been an area of a lot of work, violations and citations. I think we all know that if you come to the harbor and you get yourself a $60 ticket, you're not going to be particularly happy with your experience of coming to the harbor. And we've done so much work to try and make this an inviting place. So one of the things we did find, and again, this is specific to the Flowbird system, is that they a visitor who receives a citation can resolve the citation in, on the same day at the machine. And our intention is to offer a significant reduction in that fine, more to train the right behavior than to try and generate revenue on a citation. So my proposal is that it would be the fine would be reduced. It says 65, but I think it's actually 60, right, John? So 60, sorry, to $15, meaning you would have paid for parking anyway, plus a cup of coffee, and you're on your merry way. And that could have been a much worse experience than it was. That wouldn't necessarily be a discount we would offer for parking in a red zone or ADA violation, which are really, you know, those are much more significant than, oh, I forgot to pay my extra dollar. Next slide. Obviously, public awareness is going to be huge. It is also very common for these parking service companies to actually play a role in that, developing a website, landing page, helping with language to go out to the public. As you probably saw, there's been interviews from the paper, but having some of these specialists who can help with that messaging could be really great. 24/7 1-800 number that's bilingual, links and QR codes to register complaints or any citation protests or just feedback in general. Next slide. Spinnaker Drive will be excluded. It's city property. We've covered that before. 211 spaces will be free to anyone, first come, first serve, 7 days. Next slide. And Ventura Harbor North, really no changes here, except in consultation with Brian, this is going to be the pilot rollout. To make sure everything is working right, we're going to start here where, you know, usage and visitation is much lower. It is already a paid parking lot. No one should be completely surprised that that there's any, you know, notable changes. So really, we'll be able to make sure all the functionality is working, our landing pages are working, the signage is good. People are complying with the program. We're resolving issues with the vendor if there are any. And then we go to the beaches and the village lots. Next slide. That's the north lots. So again, the 19A, the south one-third will be free, but the paid parking at the launch ramp. And then when we have the city permits to do so, we'll take down the fence at the dry storage, and that will also be paid parking. Next slide. I know, I'm sorry, it's long. Lots to cover. The contract type will be for one service provider to do everything. This is a huge reduction in effort for the district to manage, because we're putting this on one business that has all the experience to do this, to procure the equipment, install the equipment, make sure all of the systems are talking to each other, resolve complaints. They already have 24/7, bilingual support, because they're doing this nationwide. Most of the big companies already are providing on-site maintenance support. We don't have to train anybody, and it really will be instrumental in the public messaging part. The contracts, Ben and I talked about this a lot, and a three-year contract plus 2 one-year options. One aligns with the Coastal Commission permit, which is 5 years. So we completely encapsulate that without having to come back to do anything more if we're satisfied with the performance. And at the end of the contract, at the end of 3 years, we will own all the assets. So if we ask the vendor to walk away, hire someone else, cancel the program, whatever is the board's pleasure at that time, we still own all the assets that we bought upfront. Next slide. That's similar. And so some of the elements of the RFP, Dixon's right now, we're going back and forth on the actual RFP document itself with a detailed scope of work. The Flowbird pay station, as I mentioned, Dixon will be establishing some of the bid evaluation criteria, experience, company performance, et cetera. But ultimately, and we'll get to that on the next slide, it's really going to be cost-driven. The contract, as I said, 3 years plus 2 year, 1 year options. And then on the next slide, there's a pricing matrix, which will fully allow us to evaluate the total cost of ownership over the period of the contract. Next slide. It's actually a 7 or 8 page Excel spreadsheet, and this is the final thing that when the bids are opened, this is what we will look at. It'll show each of the different vendors. Obviously, there's a master vendor responsible for everything, but there'll be sub vendors listing their annual price for year one, year two, year three, the option years, and every single type of fee. The spreadsheet includes our estimates based on ATE, the actual visitation, so we can actually compute a estimated total cost based on estimated total revenue. Those numbers, well, they're estimated. We didn't do, a year, 365-day parking lot count, but we have a very good estimate based on the work ATE has done in the past, and that will allow all the bidders to very clearly bid against each other effectively and very clear, transparent costs for us. Next slide. Other requirements, again, they'll be doing signs, machines, web page, app, all bilingual, 24/7 bilingual service. Users will need to be able to pay in advance, so that if you're going to Island Packers on a Thursday and you're going out to the island and you're going to camp, hey, well, paid parking starts Friday. That's okay. You can pay on Friday, and you can pay for Friday through Sunday if that's what you so choose. We need to accommodate visitors with no bank account. There's ways to do that with the different prepaid credit cards. Obviously, cash is an option. The license plate recognition data will be shared with both law enforcement, so we can do BOLOs, lost child. Hey, wait, that car just drove into the harbor. That'll be immediately commuted to police department. And it'll also integrate with DMV, so a citation is actually tied to the registration. So the ability to enforce and collect becomes much more effective than not doing that, which is the way it is today. And again, the same thing about collecting public comment and feedback. Last slide, I think. And we're going to do some evaluation KPIs, key performance indicators, on the performance of our vendor to make sure that they're doing everything they need to do and be able to report back that we're pleased and satisfied with the performance of basically, the face of the Port District for a lot of people when they first arrive. Next slide. So the next steps, with the board's approval, District and Dixon will advertise a request for proposals probably by the week of June or January 6th at the latest, but we'll be working behind the scenes, maybe faster. Bidders generally require 45 days to respond to such a complicated and comprehensive solicitation. The bids will be evaluated by staff and Dixon, and will return to the board with a recommendation to award, presumably mid-February meeting. And staff will return to the board again with recommendations related to tenant, employee, boat captain, all the parking permits in the village, and a validation mechanism. Finalizing these steps will be independent from the RFP, because whoever wins will be able to implement whatever it is the board decides they want to do. I think that's our last slide. Ready for questions and discussion?
All right. Before I turn it over to the board, let me ask if there's any public comments. Don't see anybody in the room. Do we have a public comment online?
Yes. First, we received a written comment from Jeff Morehouse that was distributed to the commissioners and posted on the website. And online, we have Brian from Andreas. Brian, you're able to speak.
Thanks very much. Good evening, Chair Blumenberg, Port Commissioners, and staff. My name is Brian Bargill, CEO Andreas Seafood. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Thank you very much. It must come as no surprise that all our Ventura Harbor tenants, including Andreas Seafood, are deeply concerned about the implementation of the parking management program. But first, I'd really like to state that my experience of communicating with Port District staff on this issue, especially with Deputy General Manager Todd Mitchell, has been very positive. And as a result, I do believe that we're all rowing in the same direction. We all want to provide high quality visitor serving amenities, services, and infrastructure. And based on these conversations, I think that changing visitor parking behavior through the implementation of the parking management program should, not shall, as was discussed earlier, but should increase parking turnover and drive beachgoers into the village to spend money. Also, in my view, in order for this program to be implemented within any sort of reasonable time frame, especially before Memorial Day 2025, a request for proposals for the parking management services should indeed be approved this evening. When it comes to how the program will be implemented, the devil is always in the details. And of course, by reading staff's memo, there are lots of details to work out with regard to how the parking program is implemented. These issues include, but of course are not limited to, validation, staff permits, vendor permits, validation, secure nighttime travel of staff to the remote parking areas, validation, hope you get my idea, and other known and yet unknown issues. This is complicated because you're not a municipal entity, you're our landlord and our partners in business success. After looking at the fiscal impact section of the staff report, the Port District may have some significant resources to help mitigate the impact of the parking management program, including a real PR campaign, promoting events which will draw visitors to the harbor during the off season, and reducing the potential fiscal impact of validation on merchants. Additionally, I'd like to suggest that the board, that the final implementation plan proposal be formally endorsed by both Ventura Harbor Village tenants and Port District staff before it's presented to you for approval, thereby ensuring that all your stakeholders have bought in and have a positive attitude toward the changes. The Port District has many sources of revenue, leases, percentage rent, offloading percentage, public grants, federal funds, and the list goes on. Andreas and the other village merchants have a single source of revenue, the customers who drive here, park their vehicles, and come in our front doors. If our visitor traffic goes down as a result of the parking program implementation, we will all suffer revenue loss, and your tenants like Andreas will bear the greatest brunt of the negative consequences. Thanks for listening.
Brian, thank you for joining us tonight, and thank you for those well thought out comments. Very good. Jessica, could you summarize the email that we got also? I think that, well, I have the email, or I think I can summarize it to say that Jeff Morehouse, who is also a tenant, his approach or his thought is that the validation really needs to be considered and resolved before we implement. So, which is opposite of what our approach is here. So that's one opinion. So, all right, do we have any other public comments?
There are no other public speakers.
We'll close public comments and let me take it over to the board. Commissioners, where do you want to start with this meaty topic?
I can say it. I was impressed that it's using a new, it's not a new technology, because the CHP and other police forces do that with licenses. Question is if I don't have a license plate, or, you know, that's something in terms of the implementation, if it's not your real license plate thing, because people do that. The second thing is, I know in some restaurants, if you bring your ticket in, they'll validate it. And that I think could be an incentive for you. When it come down to dinner, you can park, but if you come in for dinner or buy something, we can validate it. I'm sure that something can be done to handle that. But I think it's something that's really needed, because I don't see this strictly as a revenue producer, but more of, like it says, parking management is managing a scarce resource. And it's not just managing it, it's basically managing it so that time is a factor. You want people to stay longer. You want them to be closer, and advantages and things like that, as opposed to, you know, okay, who has the most money. But I think that the fiscal security is in there, of what the Coastal Commission has stated, what you can charge. I see all of that already built in there, so we don't have to figure any of that out. And I'm really in support of proceeding with this.
Thank you, Tony. Chris, comments?
First off, I thought that the $10 a day thing was a little odd, but apparently we can't talk about fees since they're in the Coastal Commission approval, so I won't go there. A couple things. These fixed LPR cameras and the grace period, I don't quite understand why we would need that. We have a system where we will know when they got their ticket, and when the patrol car spotted them, we can just say we're going to establish a 10-minute grace period or something, right? I don't know why we would need a camera for that. So I'll just throw that out. Maybe there's a good explanation. I can let you.
It would really literally be just someone is standing at the pay station or downloading the app and trying to pay. They're not at the car and someone's writing them a ticket because they drove by for the first time and you haven't paid for parking.
So they're physically writing tickets and putting them on the dashboard. They're not doing it electronically.
It's required by law in California. Nice. You cannot just mail someone a ticket.
Okay. And so how does our camera, our fixed camera, handle the fact that they've been circulating in the parking lot for 10 minutes trying to find a space?
Well, I mean,
I can jump in. So the camera's essentially gonna grab their license plate when they first come into the harbor, and so that essentially starts the session, right? And so the idea is the person could either pay through the mobile app or they could pay it at the pay station, and they there could be an established grace period of 10 minutes from the time they actually enter into the harbor, from the time they actually make the payment. And that's the whole reason that the fixed mount camera would be there in the first place. It would just be an extra set of eyes to verify, to give the parker 10 minutes to make their parking session valid. That way, as Todd said, if they drive in without that camera, say they go to the pay station and the parking enforcement officer goes to the car, writes them a ticket, even though they've only been there for a couple of minutes, it just gives them an extra buffer to give them a little more time to pay for that parking session.
I kind of, now that I know they have to have to write one and put it on the under the like the old days, I get that. However, if people, it takes them 15 minutes to circulate and find that spot, it's going to be 25 minutes before they get there to do their payment. I mean, how long is our grace period? I guess that's something to be figured out. I'm a little.
Yeah. Correct. And that's going to be figured out through the process with the parking operator. The idea is, we don't, you know, obviously you don't want to be punitive. You want to be supportive. You want people to be compliant. And so that also would need to be figured out about how long that period is going to be. It could be pushed out to 15 or 20 minutes. We just want to make sure that not to be punitive, right? That you don't want people to come into the harbor and have a negative experience about parking, where they come in to pay for parking, they get a ticket. And so we understand that, but that's something that needs to be fleshed out.
Okay. No, I completely agree with the goal of it. I'm just a little concerned about how it's going to work. The pay stations, only four of them have coin take coins. I mean, you don't think that's going to be confusing to folks? To someone who wants to pay with coins has to find one that'll take a coin? Is that how it's going to work?
Well, the intent is to put one at each of the beach lots, one at the launch ramp, and one at the village. We can obviously do more. The devices are modular, and we can buy more that have more.
Are all of the city machines, do they take coins?
I don't think so. Industry is moving away from it because of the wear and tear and.
Well, that was my thought, was I'd almost rather go no coins, right? I mean, I just think having a few is a little confusing to folks who have to find the one that'll take a coin, but that's.
Ben, can you comment? I can't recall if we are truly required to have to accept cash as a government agency.
So in California, just because of unbanked individuals, it's smart to have that option, and to Todd's point, it would just be, maybe a few. And the idea is if everything's modular, right? So if you start out with four and you realize you want to maybe increase that, you can. But just because for some individuals that might be unbanked, you want to give them an opportunity at least, drive into the harbor and pay for parking.
Oh, if it's a simple modular, then maybe what you do is that cell we talk about are being able to take complaints, and maybe that's one we get. We immediately go back out and put out some more coin. I mean, or not. I don't know. I don't pay with coins, but I know some people might.
So there would be a sign saying if you want to pay by coin or cash, go to that machine over there. Something like that. I mean, we'd have to.
I hadn't given that thought, but that's certainly
I
something
would
that
hope
could go
so.
in.
John?
Also take electronic payments.
Yeah.
So
it is not that the coin machine only takes
Oh,
coins.
yeah. No, I understand
They
that.
all can
No.
take the electronics. But I
No.
will say also from our side, we're having a lot of issues going to the bank with hundreds of pounds of coins nowadays, and they're saying we don't want them. We don't want to carry them, but I had to take a
No.
dolly the other day when we took some.
Yeah, no, I agree. As I said, my inclination was to have none. Right, to make it all electronic, but the north parking lot initiation test, I think, is awesome. That is a great idea. Well done. The RFP release, I don't I you mentioned January 6th and earlier. If you had it, I would suggest you not do it earlier. My experience releasing RFPs during the holidays was never good. So I would suggest that you do that. And then last thing, mention the patrol cars. Can we specify they be electric?
Yeah, I think
Do we?
we were contemplating hybrid or electric because we have to make sure it has sufficient endurance to drive basically 8 continuous hours. But we can
Okay.
if the
Okay.
board would prefer electric only, we certainly can.
Well, I mean, if that's going to create operational problems, I'm open to a hybrid, but
Yeah.
I just think that if it's not, if it's something that's feasible and doesn't compromise the operations, then electric would be the way to go.
We'll do some math and see.
Yeah.
The
Maybe
nice
golf carts.
tie back to our sustainability strategy.
Yeah. First, very pretty thorough presentation. Good presentation. I'm assuming the RFP is equally, thorough. I do have a few questions, though. Does the RFP specify where these cameras are going? Because you keep talking about when people come into the harbor, and I don't think we're trying to capture the people at the marinas and going to the boatyard and going to the water district and going, to various places, and that could turn into some real privacy issues. We're only trying to capture the people going into the areas for the shopping and the beaches. So I think a discussion of where the cameras go is an important one.
Yeah, I'll say that probably the biggest factor is going to make sure that we have power.
Absolutely.
So, for example, the entrance at Schooner is that's the only place we can put it, is right at the corner of Schooner and Harbor.
Oh, that's going to
And so
create a
that
lot
is
of
going to
issues.
capture, but the next question is data security, as we will not have the data. So we will not have the license plates of anybody. There will
Well,
be no captures of
but
photos
then
ever.
you've got all the people going to the storage unit and the water plant and the boat yard and the marinas who shouldn't need permits, but it's going to force them to need permits in order to access those places.
No,
Why
no.
not?
It
Because it's going to be reading
it'll
the
only be
license plates.
recording that the license plate has entered the harbor.
Right. Well, they're going to be entering the harbor to go to those places. Have you said if they're going as soon as they come in the harbor? Well, if it's capturing them before they get past the boatyard and the water plant, then it's capturing all these other people who have nothing to do, or they're parking in free parking.
Yeah, there'll be a lot of people who will be fit that as well. Everyone parking on Spinnaker, for example, they don't need a permit.
Correct.
So there'll be no enforcement.
Well, how? We're running up costs by capturing all of these license plates of people we don't want to capture. I mean, you've got how many hundred at Ventura Isle Harbor Marina and at Portside and at Ventura West Marina, and going in and out of the boatyard and the storage facility and the
But aren't
mobile
all
home
the, I mean,
farm.
it's all electronic and it's just going to populate in a database and it just sits there unless he's looking at this car and should I give this car a ticket compared to what's in the database?
I've got a
At the end of the
very
day,
strong
that purges.
objection to it on multiple fronts, but I mean, very strong objection to it. Moving on.
I guess I don't understand the objection of privacy objective
It's
or.
privacy, but it's also they're going to talk about storage. They've got to store all of these. You probably have 50% of the cars that are going to go through that camera don't need to be tracked at all.
Would Todd, is there a duration known for, I mean, do you store it more than 24 hours?
Yeah, Ben, correct me if I'm wrong, they don't store the images at all.
No, they don't store them at all. So it's not going to be an issue in terms of we're talking about storage and we're talking about what that would cost for that storage. It's not going to be an issue because it essentially dumps everything. It really just captures the plate once they come in, and they don't keep the plate numbers and they don't store them.
So if somebody wants to contest a fee, then how would, if you don't have it stored, how are they going to contest a fee?
Because their license plate would actually be on the citation itself, so then they would be able to contest that.
In terms of your fees, the fee schedule, is there going to be a separate fee for refunds if people do contest and win? And be a refund fee, I'm imagining, and I didn't see that on there.
I don't know if I follow.
If somebody gets a citation and they contest it and they win, then the company's going to have to refund their money, and there's probably going to be a refund fee.
No, there's not fees associated with what's called a chargeback. And so that's what that's called, is a chargeback. That is something that the citation company would cover, and that there would be no fee pushed on to the district at all.
That's on tape, I hope. Trucks and commercial vendors very often come in and drop things off. How are we going to account for them? They'll be registered, but they simply won't get a citation again.
So that goes back to the grace period that we're discussing. So again, it could be that, if you're Uber Eats and you're picking up a meal, you are going to fall within the grace period most likely. There's also an option to put a button for walk up to the machine, put in 10-minute, loading. So that could be, and that's almost, I would say, a placebo for, or maybe you have been circling forever and you're just doing a 10-minute stop. There's an option to do. And that's actually, I think, on the screenshot from the presentation, a 10-minute free or 15-minute free, whatever we might do. The reality is trucks are not supposed to deliver after 11 anyway. So the reality is this is actually an opportunity to enforce red zone parking, which we do have a problem
Okay.
with. So this is actually, in some ways, a
That's fair
positive.
enough. Fair enough. Employees a lot of times will bring things in for their businesses, and if they don't have a permit to park there, again, they could be caught up too. Private parking, Ventura Yacht Club. Again, you're just going to rely on them not being cited because their license plate is captured, but they go inside the gate?
Well, the citation has to be written by hand by someone who actually sees a vehicle parked illegally, effectively.
The yacht club would not be part of the enforcement area. The only enforcement areas would be within the village and within the other lots that were described.
Speaking of the yacht club, when they have regattas, a lot of times you have boats with trailers. You're going to capture one license plate, and when they park, they could take two places. Or if when they separate them out, they'll have two different ones. Are you going to be capturing both license plates, and how would you do that?
I think John can respond to that question.
Presently, there's no trailer parking in the Harbor Village or either of the two beach parking lots.
It's over at Ventura West Marina right now. Generally, they allow them to park there. The Harbor Ventura West 2.
Ventura West 2 is not part of the enforcement zone.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's managed by that marina manager directly.
Okay, great. I know that we can't have rate increases, which is, great, without, authorization. If per our caller, this is too successful and we dampen down participation or parking too much, are we allowed to consider rate decreases?
Interestingly enough, the language of the city's permit does not allow any rate change.
Oh, well.
However, we could do, for example, happy hour, or sending out validation codes through social media to all of our visitors and say, hey, look, November's slow. Why don't you come on down and put in free parking as your passcode, and then everybody's parking is valid. So that
I would be very cautious about making 1 week to the next week changes in our program in the first year for certain.
Okay.
Yeah.
For cheaters trying to get out of it, I know there's going to be free parking at the one end of Ventura Isle, but you've got the various marinas and so on. Are they going to be stuck with their own policing for cars that are trying to get out of paying for parking?
They already have to do that now, and they
it hasn't been a problem because parking is free.
Well, it's already an issue, particularly for Marina West too. They do have people who are at the gates on weekends for that reason.
And it's going to become a worse problem. So we need to think about that ahead of time.
Yeah, I mean, parking, the portion of parking that we occupy within Ventura Isle will continue to be free parking.
Right, but that already there's some where they come over to the side that's for residents and boat owners there.
I contemplate
that getting worse.
Sure, I think it's a good point and something we will continue to work with.
Okay.
Management there.
Okay. Yeah. And then validation. I think we need to work that out, but I don't see it being dependent on this. I think we can go ahead with this without worrying about validation at this point, though I think they're fair to say we do need to figure it out. So those are all my concerns.
All right. Elizabeth, thank you. Jackie, thoughts?
Yeah, I wanted to go back to data security at storing credit cards. If I've got the app, the city just sent out something about a breach of their parking app. So where's the responsibility lie for that?
That's the reason we want to be hands off. By having the parking service provider entirely in charge of that, we don't have any of the data. We have no license plate numbers. We have no credit card numbers. We have no transaction information of who is where, when, why, how. That's all within the parking management service provider's responsibility.
And so that will be part of the contract that's signed, that they're responsible under California law for all of any data breach that they have, the notifications that have to occur, and all of that will lie with the vendor.
Yeah, Ben, maybe you could comment on.
Yep, I will. Yes, I will agree with that. It completely lies within the parking management company or the vendor. Correct.
And just so I wasn't clear, the parole that we, parole.
Patrol?
Not validation. Patrol? No, patrol. Thank you. The patrol, is that a harbor staff person or is that a vendor person?
Vendor.
And is it a vendor vehicle or is it a staff vehicle? Okay, so could we dictate the kind of vehicle? that they
Okay,
drive as part of
absolutely.
the.
Because we will own the asset at the end of 3 years. So if
Okay.
you want to tell them, I mean, as an example, if the commissioners felt so inclined, they could say EV or nothing. And that might mean they have to buy two because maybe the endurance of one vehicle won't do 8 hours of patrol or 10 hours of patrol consistently. That's fine. That's just a cost. It's your policy to institute the way you want.
And just my last piece was I do feel like we're in that place of we've been talking about this for a couple of years, and suddenly we're saying, oh my gosh, by Memorial Day, we've got to have it implemented. And it still feels like there's a lot of unknowns about the implementation. The validation is unknown, how permits will work is an unknown. And there's some of the questions raised tonight. It sounds like you'd like to come back and have in mid-February and have the RFP agreed upon, bring it to the board, and if the board approves of it, that's what I heard him say, is mid-February.
Mid-February, if we
No,
post
not the RFP, the contract. The
the
contract.
contract. Yeah, excuse me, the
The RFP
contract.
is. If we push advertisement to January 6th, it might be the first meeting in March, but.
Then when will we know, or when will something be brought to us about permits, validation, and other things? Because it feels like all of a sudden it's going to be on us, and we haven't resolved that yet. So when does the staff intend to bring that back?
Well, the reality is, I mean, Brian brought up a very interesting consideration that we have to get the buy-in from the tenants before we come back to you, or that could be very challenging, of course, to get, all of the tenants to buy in, but we could certainly make it a sausage-making meeting with the board, or we could come up with a plan which we think, the preponderance of tenants are supportive of. And look for their comments and your guidance as to the policy.
So that, sure, there's a couple ways to do it, but for me, it's the when question. When do we intend to take that up? When do you want, we're going to be
Think we need it
approved
in March.
in March, okay, because you want to approve the contract mid-February, but we want this contract to include the implementation of things that we haven't decided yet, validation or permits or so. To me, it feels a little bit chicken. No, cart horse. Sorry, I'm really tired.
Cart before the chicken.
That works for me. Because I don't, how are we going to approve a contract when we haven't decided what we want them to implement as part of that contract?
Well, I could answer, but I'm going to turn this one back to Ben because I told him this question was coming. So.
Yeah, so the idea is, it's not going to take long for these vendors to incorporate both permits as well as validation options. Those are actually pretty easy to implement and install within the program. The things that would take the longest time really is the hardware, right? So like the pay stations, that's something that we would really like to get moving on, sooner than later. And so with the contract approved in February, we'd really want to hit the ground running and make sure that the hardware is in place for installation. But with everything done digitally, and whether that's through validations or permits, that's all going to be done on a digital platform. That can be accomplished real quickly. It's really, like I said, the thing that takes the longest is really going to be the hardware and the installation and the delivery and everything else that has to go with the pay stations itself. But it's not going to take a long time in terms of a time frame to get the validation component if that's what you choose to do, or the permit component if that's also what you choose to do to move forward and get that in place.
But it doesn't change the underlying cost of the contract if a month after we've approved it, we say now we've decided to do validation and permits.
So regarding permits and validation setup, it's negligible compared to the overall contract amount. You're really, paying a lot for the pay stations itself. To implement a permit program where in terms of the amount of permittees that are going to likely hold permits, it's not that much in terms of what the harbor's looking at versus what a city might be looking at. And same thing with validations. It's really easy to set up. It's not that expensive to set up. A validation program to set up for a lot of cities is anywhere between $1,500 to $4,500. And so for the harbor program, the validation setup and all the back office that entails, you're probably not spending any more than $5,000 from my experience working with companies that have set that up in the past.
I should clarify,
we expect to do something. It's just what it is. So for example, we could just arbitrarily say for every X number of square feet, you get a permit. Done. That might work. That might not. We might not get, as Brian suggested, everyone to sign on for that. But that is a potential. And then for validation, it could be if you spend this much money, you will get this many hours free. And that only changes revenue, not cost. So we expect the vendors will know that they need to do these things. It's just what that looks like in terms of, and that's only going to reduce the revenue, not create more cost.
Right. We did previously in prior board reports discuss a framework for the permits, which is generally what Todd's referring to. So, I mean, the framework is already there for a certain number of permits per business plus square footage. Again, the overall consideration here is, and I think you all understand this, which is if we just gave everybody a permit, we're not changing anything. Or we're having very little impact if we're just putting everybody right back into the parking lot with no conditions, right? So the idea is to change behavior and to limit the number of permits that are given out per business. Again, remember, we're talking about Friday through Sunday as well. Monday through Thursday is free, right? So we're talking about 3 days plus holidays per week. The secondary is validation. There was a good discussion at the workshop about that. And I think some tenants might be interested in potentially paying into that or not. Do I think everyone's going to have a universal opinion and all agree on the same thing? Highly doubtful. But I think those two areas, I think, are the areas that we've already provided some context for. But we want to continue to explore that with the tenants before we give you a hard recommendation on this is exactly how many permits each business should get, and exactly how a validation system should work. So those are intentionally omitted from tonight's discussion.
And I think just for,
Tonight's decision, not the discussion.
and I
Yeah.
completely understand and agree that the RFP, but I guess what I'd like to say is if we wait until March, that gives us 2 months before implementation to say, okay, we've come up with a plan for permit and validation and messaging to the public. That's just not a lot of time. So I want to make sure that we have a clear timeline for these decisions to be made so that the messaging and education can be done.
We could come back sooner with that particular part of the item before the RFP is
I
awarded.
would appreciate any information that can be provided at an earlier date so that we and the public can start to understand not just a framework, but actually out of these two options, we think this one is the stronger one for the district, and this is why.
Can I jump in on that? I agree with your caution, your concern. I think the board should own the go live decisions. We think we're ready to go live in the North Harbor. Board, do you concur? And I think we should own that decision. I think the second step or the major step of the rollout into the whole district, again, that's a board decision. You got to come back to us and say we've addressed these comments, right? A lot of concern. I heard the goal that we need to get out there before the summer. I understand that, but I think we run the risk of if we put the wrong thing in place, it could be a disaster. So we need to be very prudent, very cautious, and make sure that we've thought it through. We allow enough time for testing. And so I think we're wrestling with all the different elements here. A schedule is the way to address that, right? A simple Gantt schedule would help us understand all the pieces and when those pieces come together and when you're going to come back to us, right? I think that would, I'm talking like an engineer programmer. A schedule would be very helpful. Jackie, back to you. Yeah, so I think the schedule is aggressive. I think we need to allow ourselves enough time to test this, right? Let's go out, let's get a couple of tickets, right? Let's volunteer a commissioner to park overtime and see how the process works.
Trying to offload those.
What is the lead time for these Flowbird CWD machines? I I mean, again, you're talking an aggressive timeline. Are these things readily available, or is there a 1 month lead time, a 6 month lead time?
Ben, do you know the answer to that? We've talked to Will a few times.
Yeah, our discussions with Flober, they can get to, they said they can get to us pretty quickly, but that's something that we need to circle back to the board and just to give you a more definitive answer. That's something we can find out though in the next few days though.
Does this RFP cover any maintenance on the Flowbirds, or does that go back to the Flowbird company?
No, there's a warranty, and then the contract would require extended warranty through the period of performance. So if it, I don't know what the warranty is, let's say it's 3 years, the contract will show in option year one, extra warranty, option year two, extra warranty.
And who would interface with Flowbird, the company that we're going to hire to manage the
We're at
parking?
arm's length.
And perhaps warranties after we've taken possession of them.
What did you say the service life on these is 8 years, Ben?
Yeah, approximately 8 years. Then the city of Ventura, they're getting probably about 10 years out of their current pay stations right now. So yeah, about 8 years.
Lot of discussion about validation. From what I hear, validation is it's got to be a requirement, right? And I understand the balance between giving out too many parking permits, too much validation. What I heard at the workshop, what I heard again tonight is from the business owner's perspective, validation will help drawing customers into there. So I think we've got to figure out that validation again, figure out when you're going to bring that back to the board and tell us. I think a tenant workshop on validation, it could be a little bit of a free for all, and you're going to get you if you have 10 attendees, you're going to get 15 different ideas, but give them the opportunity, right? I think that's a good idea. In the package tonight, and Todd, I don't recall if you emphasized it or not, but in the package tonight, the mobile app seemed to be an option that you were still wrestling with. My opinion that the mobile app is got to be there, right? Just like we talked about coins, I think everybody's going mobile these days. I'm trying to catch up. We got to do the mobile app. So that's one commissioner's opinion. When you evaluate, so you're going to put this RFP out. I agree with Chris's comment. Don't do that before Christmas. Hit it in the new year. When you get bids, you said you're going to select your contractor primarily based on the revenue, right? What does the revenue stream look like? I think the bid evaluation needs to really consider prior performance, past performance, proven performance. More important than going for the money, I think we got to get a trusted partner. We're putting a lot of responsibility on this company, and we need to really look at their prior performance.
That's a great point. And we do within our RFPs that we assist agencies, municipalities with, we do prefer performance within California, specifically coastal regions in California, coastal cities in California. So that's going to be within the RFP.
Yeah, I'll just say that we probably will look to legal counsel if we have questions about the responsiveness of the bidder in terms of exactly what you said. It may be that a bidder gets rejected because their past performance is unsatisfactory. But
Well, we don't have to reject them. We can just simply have that as a criteria that they score poorly on, correct?
right. Well, Tom, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think we're allowed to have a matrix scoring evaluation of the RFP. We have talked about this.
Right. You're required by the not only your own competitive bidding policy, but the one that you've subscribed to. And that calls for payment to the lowest responsive responsible bidder.
Oh, responsible. Pardon me. That's the word I should use.
And that's because of the capital equipment.
That's because of the prevailing wage law, not the prevailing wage. I'm sorry, the competitive bidding rules that you follow.
For the capital equipment. This is, in other words, because a big part of this is management, right? Is a professional services contract,
correct?
Which would allow that kind of review.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Okay, and because we have the equipment and the construction there, we are bound by that requirement. So the professional services element kind of
Well,
gets subsumed.
I need to think about that a little bit more, but
Okay. A huge part of this is professional services in my mind, maybe even as Mike says, maybe more so than
financially, it's way higher. The service component, I won't necessarily use the word professional, but the service component is probably 3/4 of the cost.
Yeah. So yeah, we may be able to deal with that.
Okay.
I don't want an answer to this tonight, but we talked about this same day coverage or same day I can adjudicate my parking permit or my parking citation. I think that's a great idea. Difficult to understand that process. I really don't want to go through those weeds tonight, but at some point, I think the board would like to hear, how does that work? Right. Let's go through those details. All right, I think that was all of my questions. Any second nickels from anybody here?
Let me just add another. I mean, you've heard from everyone, I think, the concerns about the schedule and the aggressiveness of it and all the things that we have to do in the public domain, which just are messy and take a long time. But I think your target, if you will, about doing it before the summer, I think another way to look at that in my mind is if we can't get these things done, just don't implement it during the summer, that it comes right after the summer. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I was kind of, as you guys were talking through that, I was kind of thinking about, you know, some of this will depend on the timing of how long it takes to procure, install,
right,
get the system up and running. And this is not a formal proposal at this point, but it could be that North Harbor is before and the village and the beaches are after.
Right.
I mean, it would have been nice, obviously, to capture all of that during the summer because that's our peak. But given the timeline and some of the other things that were discussed tonight, there are a lot of decision points still to be made. There's a lot of details that have to be worked out for remote lots and the free lots and some of those things that aren't enforcement, but they're management. And so that's a thought. I don't want to necessarily formalize that tonight, but because we don't have a schedule in front of you, I'd rather spend more time coming up with a Gantt chart or something similar to that where we do that. But that's one scenario I could see. Again, as you heard earlier and you commented on, the North Harbor is already has paid parking. So now it's new machines. It's, you know, there's some differences, but it's an area of implementation that is somewhat less complicated.
All right. So the action in front of us, there's three items on the agenda. First two were receive updates. So the action in front of the board is to approve the staff to publish this RFP. I think you've been given some feedback that don't rush it out the door here at Christmas time. But with that one caveat, commissioners, do I have a motion to move this forward?
I'll move the recommended action.
Second.
So I have a motion and a second to approve the staff to publish an RFP for the parking management services. All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none opposed. Motion's approved. Good luck getting that on the street.
Thank you. Thank you, Ben.
Ben, thanks for joining us tonight. Your insight was helpful, and we look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Thank you. All right. We are on to our last item of the night, Resolution 3519, which are amendments to our procurement and purchasing policy. Brian?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Reed Miller with Lagerlof Partners is joining us remote tonight, was involved in helping prepare the updates and has an overview to provide.
Good evening, commissioners. I will keep this pretty high level given the time. Then, of course, you can ask any specific questions you have. We were tasked with updating the procurement policy to implement some changes to the law. The primary change that is reflected throughout the policy is changes to the Unified Public Construction Cost Accounting Act, UPCCA, bidding thresholds. The district became subject to the UPCCA when it elected to adopt policies under it in 2013. These new thresholds increase various numbers from 60,000 to 75 for contracts, or excuse me, contracts that can be led by force of account, negotiated contract, or a purchase order. And then it also raises the next set of thresholds, which is the next one is the threshold for informal bidding. It raised it from 200 to 220, and then again it capped the limit at 220. So anything above 220 that falls under the UPCC definition of public project or maintenance work is then subject to the UPCC formal bidding procedure, which are summarized in the Exhibit C, excuse me, Exhibit B that is attached to the policy. We also added some clarifying remarks. For example, in the professional service section, excuse me, professional service agreement section, we clarified that professional services are not subject to any public bidding or lowest bidding requirement. They are evaluated based on demonstrated competence and professional qualifications. We also added, this was a significant accomplishment because of so many issues that have come up in the past regarding prevailing wages, especially as how they pertain to tenant improvement projects. So we added a new section, Roman numeral 7, for the public, or excuse me, prevailing wage policies. We also created two contract exhibits attached as Exhibit E1 and Exhibit E2, which will be the proposed or proposed master contract addendums that would be attached to any district contract, lease, et cetera, that is subject to California's prevailing wage requirements. There's a short form and a long form. The idea is that the short form contract would be attached to contracts that are for design professionals for smaller projects, and then, of course, used in connection with contractors that you already work with and you are certain that they are, or at least have experience, knowing that their experience with the DIR's extensive registration and payroll reporting requirements, which are outlined in detail in the long form and summarized in the short form. We also updated the portion of the policy regarding federal procurements to implement changes to the bidding thresholds regarding procurements that are funded by federal projects, which are now a little more streamlined, and they are designed to reduce administrative burdens. And of course, we added a section indicating that the single audit threshold was increased from $750 to $1 million. And lastly, we actually, those are the extent of our updates. I think I covered them all very quickly. So I'll now turn it over to the board for any questions or staff.
Before we go out to comment, public comment?
No.
All right. Do we have any public comments on this item? None in the room. Anybody online? Nobody online. So, commissioners, questions, comments? Elizabeth?
Tom, did you want to introduce the amendment, or should I do that? There was some question about some very difficult to understand language under Section 3. I think it was our pages 196 and 197. And so they, Reed and Tom, reviewed it and simplified it dramatically by coming up with a definition for UPCCA versus non-UPCCA. And they handed out, Tom handed out a page that it covers Section 3, B. Items 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, and that is to replace what was in our package.
So again, the intent of this is.
It was there was some very difficult to understand language about it was actually read ambiguously about whether something was subject to UPCCA or not. And so they rewrote it to make it much more clear to understand.
So we got these concerns from Commissioner Howell, and we felt that the easiest way to deal with them, because we agreed that they could be confusing, was just to rewrite a section here. And I have on my page of the PDF 242. I'm not sure where.
Oh, no, you're right. I apologize. I'm looking at a different screen. Oh, you're right.
So there are two types. Well, actually, Reed wrote this. Maybe I can ask him to explain that the basically two changes that we made.
Yeah, so the first, so the key here is that this subsection, Roman numeral 3B, applies to the procurements of goods and services that are not subject to the UPCCA definition. So again, that's the definition of public project or maintenance work. If that's the case, then section 3D would apply. So those are the two sections that potentially are confusing. This, there is the word not at the beginning, but we agreed again that we wanted to make it more clear that this section 3B applies to non-PCCA, that acronym is difficult, non-UPCCA goods and services. And we added that as a defined term, which made it a lot more clear when you go through the different thresholds here, which are starts at 1,000, 2,500 goes up to 25,000, I believe. It makes it a lot easier to track. And then we also added another sentence at the beginning of that new paragraph that's at the top that again just reiterates that if these exceptions don't apply, it's going to be subject to that section Roman numeral 3D. This is also the updated Exhibit C1 is a diagram which corresponds to this, and I think that this improved language, and then of course being able to turn to that diagram, this would clear up any potential confusion if you're just flipping through or you flip to this section and you're wondering if this applies over subsection 3D.
So the motion, we recommend this, and the motion would be to accept, to approve the new policy with the substitution of this language for what was in there.
I had a couple of more little ones on my page 217. It says public project projects greater than 75,000 and 1 cent. It should be greater than 75,000.
Well, we did that just because it's to emphasize that it's over, because in the code it says up to. So,
Everything else says totaling
oh.
to 75,000, and that particular one says projects greater than $75,000 and 1 cent. So you leave an awkward situation. What if something happened to be exactly $75,000 and 1 cent? It's not covered.
Understood. Okay, I see that now. Then that should be corrected as well to match
Correct.
75,000. Yes, thank you.
And Schedule C, you just mentioned a change. I don't know if it's what you got in the budget. Underneath in budget, the green box, it's in the top row, second from the right. We've crossed out 75,000 and 60,000, so there's actually nothing. It's just 0,000 to 220,000. Do you see what I'm talking about?
This is Exhibit C2.
C2, yeah. In all of the others, you crossed out the 60 and put in 75, and here somebody inadvertently crossed out the 75 and the 60. It's the top row, the second one from the right.
It's I don't see it on my version. But if that's the
That's
case,
on
then
page
that's
222. I didn't go to the final version. Maybe that
the
one.
final version shows 75,000.
Good. Perfect. Perfect. Okay. E1 and E2, I gave up and didn't read those. Were they copied from someplace, or is there a whole lot of language in there? But I'm assuming it's all good in attachment one. And there was a whole lot of work in here.
The exhibits 1 and 2, the short form and the long form contract addendums.
Was it attachment one? Yeah, E1 and E2, which is all new. And I quit reading by that point.
Yes, so those are new contracts, and as I mentioned, that's something that the district's been working towards for a while, encountering all these prevailing wage, or excuse me, public works projects that trigger the prevailing wage contracts. Again, most specifically when it comes to tenant improvements for district leases. So we wanted to develop a uniform contract that can be attached to any contract that is subject to those requirements. And it can be pointed to, and it can be handed out to any outside parties that are auditing the district and looking at their contracts to see if they have the prevailing wage language. It was the basis for this contract. We looked at some of the contracts put out by Caltrans and other major public agencies that deal with public works and prevailing wage projects on a regular basis. And we ran everything by the district's consultant, Deborah Wilder, who worked with us on both the short and long form contract, and everything complies with the requirements in the code. And also what she was, Deborah was very helpful with, is adding very specific and nuanced things that have to do with how forms are submitted on the websites and just the day-to-day practical nature of this extensive process of, again, registering with the DIR if you are performing work on a contract that is subject to prevailing wage requirements, and then the ongoing monitoring process, which has two components. It's the first is submitting weekly certified eCPR payroll records through the online portal, the DIR's website. And then there's a second component where any requesting party that's authorized under the code, which includes the district and the DIR, can request the backup materials, which is much more comprehensive in nature than what is covered by the electronic filings. So all of these kind of walk a contractor through the steps. Again, the short form is there for somebody that contractors of the district works with regularly that has already gone through this process, or for smaller projects, especially non-construction related projects. So design services, A&E services, et cetera. And then the second more comprehensive version, which is 6 pages, really just spells out every single thing they need to be aware of, penalties, procedures, I mean, pretty much everything that is covered under the prevailing wage sections of the government code. Okay. And that also was very helpful to have Deborah's input.
I've got a sticky button tonight. Very good. Thank you. Yeah, I did skim it. I didn't proofread it. So, but thank you. It's good work.
We're good. So I think in general, good discussion on this. We understand the new resolution, and Tom, as you were suggesting, the motion could be we adopt the resolution subject to the incorporation of this amended paragraph B.
Yes.
Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
All right, so I have a motion and a second to adopt resolution 3519, improving the amendments to the Port District's procurement and purchasing policy with the substitution of the revised paragraph B that we
were. And that one minor correction.
And the one minor correction in section. Did you get that section or the correction?
Page 217.
No.
It was the Exhibit B, first page of Exhibit B.
Mm-hmm. All right. Roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Howell?
Yes.
Commissioner Stevens?
Yes.
Commissioner Rainey?
Yes.
Vice Chair Gardina?
Yes.
Chair Blumenberg?
Yes.
Vote carries 5-0.
All right. Appreciate the detailed reviews tonight. A lot of meaty topics. And we will reconvene in January 15th. So until then, I hope all the board has a great holiday. Staff, take some time off. Have a great holiday. And I look forward to seeing everybody in the new year. We stand adjourned. I did. Talk to your boss.
Thank you.